This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
And a good Saturday morning to you, and good luck to the participants in this weekend's Troops and Tusk Wild Hog Tournament to benefit veterans. It's going to be held at the Delcrum Shrimp Festival Grounds. You might recall last week, Director Derek Poor was running down the details, and if you want to, you might want to stop by there for some of the festivities. There's live entertainment, food, auctions, fun jumps for kids, and lots of hogs being brought in for the cause. And, of course, the big day is tomorrow. 8 a.m. is when the gates open. They'll have the weigh-in and the awards. Today you can open up at noon to 8 p.m. I'm going to have some live entertainment, lots of food, and lots of stories about those feral hogs that were bagged. Speaking of feral hogs, if you want to witness some thermal imaging nighttime hog hunting, well, you can find it on this week's Bayou Wild TV episode called Tusks, Thermals, and Thrills, as in Will the Thrill Clark, on a nighttime hunt for the hungry in Pecan Island. Check it out. You can find it on our website at BayouWildTV.com. You can stream it there or find a station near you. Apparently, the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries will be looking for a new leader. Reuters News Service is reporting on a rumor that I heard a couple of days ago that Secretary Madison Shahan, the top leader of the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, will be leaving for a federal job with Department of Homeland Security and the Office of Immigration. So I guess we'll get at least an interim, if not a permanent replacement. However, no official announcement has come down, but gotta trust that the Reuters report is accurate. Well, I've been asking you duck hunters for your undivided attention for this week's show. This morning we're going to have some guests, biologist Paul Jakubczak and David Brave. They're sounding the alarm, which many of you waterfowl hunters have been witnessing over the last few decades, and that is a decline in the duck populations. I'd like for your participation. Do you agree with their observations and, more importantly, their suggested remedies? And you can do that by texting in our studio text board, 504-260-1870. A couple questions I'll be asking you. Rate this past season on a scale of 1 to 10 in your area. And also, what is the breaking point when you would give up duck hunting? Would it be never? Would it be a 30-day season, three-bird limit, 45-day season? We've been enjoying 60 days and six ducks, and a lot of people think that's way too much. What do you think? Also, the Pearl River WMA is expected to close any time now. When that river reaches 16.5 on the gauge, they shut the gates, and I was passing through there just yesterday on the way back from a quail hunt, and let me tell you, the Pearl River is extremely high right now, and I'm sure they're going to be shutting it down. Also going on today, boy, busy Saturday, huh? Chef John Foltz's Boucherie. That's at White Oak Estate and Garden, so we'll have a live report from one of the exhibiting cooks, David Hubble. And in our Bad Boys of the Outdoor story, I'll tell you about the Tri-Parish Deer Poachers. And, of course, we'll check in with our usual suspects, the marina operators, charter captains, get some current fishing reports for you, plus our coastal marine forecast from the National Weather Service. And the winds calm down a little bit. Offshore, they're going to be 8 to 15, which is about 2 to 3 foot seas. On the interior lakes and bays, 6 to 12 knots out of the northeast. There's a lot of muddy water from all those high winds. Tomorrow, you're looking at 100% rain. You might want to scrap it unless you like to fish and hunt in the rain. Northeast winds, 12 to 20, 2 to 4 foot seas offshore, 10 to 18 knots on the interior bays. Average tide range, 1.3, and my, how the Mississippi River has jumped up. It's at 11 and continuing to rise. All right, stage is set. We're going to be back and kick it off with Robbie Campo, taking down the Campo's Marine in Shell Beach. And then we're back with a couple of biologists, David Rave and Paul Jakubczak. We're talking waterfowl and the decline of ducks this morning on The Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. Yeah, you can have some big, fat, plump shrimp, but if you throw them into dirty water, cold water, they're not always going to work. Let's talk to Robbie Campo and see what we can salvage out of this week. Robbie, you probably didn't get a whole lot of fishermen down there, so not many reports given the weather conditions we had. How was it?
Well, I tell you, Don, we had a boat that came out on Monday that was able to get out to the Long Rocks. And they picked up some sheephead and some drums, and it was a charter that was people from out of town. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it was pretty dead around here. We faced with our typical February weather, which is not always good. We had to deal with that all week, but yesterday was a game changer. Yesterday at around 12 o'clock midday there, winds diminished and it got down. I mean, it got slick. It was dead calm. No wind. We got some people in from out of town who fish here all of the time. Took off and went behind the dam. They picked up a few redfish behind the dam. Then they shot out to the Long Rocks yesterday. And, man, it turned out to be a great second half of the day. They wound up filling the box up with sheephead and black drums and some redfish. So they were able to save the second half of the day. It's just that, it's this time of the year, Don, and we just don't have a whole lot of people fishing, due to the, February weather. And that's basically what we had this week here was February is a month. It's either going to be nice or it's going to be really, not so nice. And that's what we had all week, not so nice weather.
Well, I think we got one day of it, and that's today. It may pick up where it left off yesterday afternoon. People can put some fish in the boat. But tomorrow they're calling for 100% chance of rain. So it looks like the latter part of the weekend is going to go downhill. But today, if it's your day, man, probably worth going out there, particularly if you like those mixed catches of bottom fish.
No, well, that's what I'm saying. So, look, today's going to be your window of opportunity to get out and go get a little bit of fishing in. And, Long Rocks is a spot that you could always go out there at this time of the year and get something to tug on the line. So, like I said, if you're all going and, you don't have to leave really, really early because, let it warm up a little bit, hook the left at the bridge and come on down and see us.
Want to remind people traveling through the parish, the crew of Nemesis is rolling today.
Yeah,
I think 1 o'clock and it's on Judge Perez, right? Huh?
Yeah, and that's one of the next things I was going to tell you is we do have the Knights of Nemesis Parade today in Chalmette. So if you're trying to get out of here, you'll have to go up Judge Perez to right by Gerald's Donuts and cut back on Jacob Drive and go through the back and hit Genie Street at 510. Or you could go out St. Bernard Highway all the way up to Jackson Barracks and cut across and go, get back on Judge Claiborne going out.
Or you can pull off the side of the road and catch the parade.
Road, just watch the parade. Yeah, and
wait for it to pass. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's that.
It might even be throwing some fishing lures. It might be a matrix.
You never know.
Off the floats.
You just never know. So,
Robbie, to kind of close. Go ahead.
No. I'm waiting on you.
I was going to say, to close it out, we're talking about the decline of duck hunting. How did you rate your hunters, the Biloxi Marsh? You know, it's been getting worse and worse, it seems like, every year. A couple bright spots here and there. But overall, what did the duck hunters say about Biloxi Marsh?
Don, it wasn't good, man. It's just, I got people here from Arkansas, the people I'm talking about that's from out of town, and they're having the same problems there. You know, they just don't, I don't know, we're not getting the amount of ducks. So if they're not getting them in Stuttgart, Arkansas, or, you know, the popular places that, you know, some of the duck capitals of the world, you know, what are our chances of having a successful season? Some people did very well. Some people didn't do so good. When you go to this Biloxi Marsh, Don, you got to ride, you got to look. And that's one of the only things that saved some of the duck hunters this year, is because they know, you know, you got to go ride and look. You just can't go jump in a pond and, you know, hope to blast them. But difficult, very difficult. I think we're getting less and less ducks every year. I don't know what to say or why, but it is what it is. And, you know, I hope somebody's got some answers to bringing some ducks back, you know, but I don't know if it was bird flu took out a bunch. I'm not sure what the problem is. Don, I know, if you want to kill ducks nowadays, you got to go at least to Kansas. You can't kill ducks around here no more. And it's getting worse and worse every year. And why, I don't know, but hopefully somebody can figure it out.
Yeah, well, it's a question of are there really as many ducks as they say there are, and they just don't come here, or are they really having a miscount and they're overestimating what the actual population is? Well, we're going to talk a lot more about it. We're not going to solve it this morning, but we can certainly talk about it. And thanks for your report and your input, Robbie. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Talk to you next week, Don. Bye-bye.
That's Robbie Campo, Campo's Marina in Shell Beach. All right, we come back, we'll get the discussion going. A lot of you duck hunters are up early with us this morning. That's not a problem for a duck hunter. This is late for a duck hunter. And I got some comments about the subject we're talking about. We'll share those with our audience and also talk to biologists, retired biologists, Paul Jakubczak and David Rave. They've got some theories on what the situation is and why we have a decline in ducks and what the possible remedies might be. Back with them right after this pause. You're listening to The Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. Now that another duck season has come and gone, we're talking about, let's take a look back, and I want you to text us and rate this past season from 1 to 10. What do you give this season? And also, what would it take for you to stop being a duck hunter? What restrictions on bag limits or number of days would you finally just draw the line in the sand and say, that's it, I'm out? Text us at 504-260-1870. You know, we started off the beginning of the season with the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries population estimate. And here was what I read. The 2024 November survey estimate of 510,000 ducks in Louisiana's coastal region and the Little River Basin is again the lowest on record. Did you hear that? The lowest ever on record. 12% lower than last November. Record low estimate of 584. It's 37% lower than the most 5-year average and 58% lower than the most recent 10-year average. If that's not a trend, I don't know what is. And we're going to explore this morning. For the rest of this hour, we're going to talk about waterfowl. We've invited a couple of retired biologists, David Rave, and also Paul Jakubczak, to join in with us and give us their thoughts on what the problem is, what brought it about, and how we can turn it around. Paul and David, thanks for getting up with us and talking about this very important topic to a lot of people in Louisiana and other states, too.
Thanks, Don. Appreciate you having us.
If you would, let's start off by talking about what exactly is the problem.
Well, I guess I could start. This is Dave talking. To me, the problem is that they're just the duck population across Canada has declined severely, and the biggest reason for that is that habitat conditions across the entire Prairie Pothole region have declined. The amount of habitat, both including both grass and wetlands, has declined over the last 50 to 60 years by 60 to 80%. So that I think is the major problem. And along with that decline in habitat comes a decline in the birds that rely on that habitat, which are ducks and geese.
Well, habitat is one thing, but what other factors contribute to this decline we're seeing?
Well, Don, this is Paul Jacobzak, and one of the major factors that most people realize is that the limit has been 60 days and six ducks for 28 years now, and there's been no effort at conservation by the regulators. They've just gone with the same limit when habitat, nesting conditions, predator populations have become an all-time highs, and nesting success is not enough to sustain and increase the population. Therefore, we have these record low population levels and harvest levels.
So why does this continue? If everybody is, giving the anecdotal evidence, they're seeing it out there, declines. You guys are biologists, and you've certainly noticed it. The departments are noticing smaller fall flights. Why do they continue to go with the most liberal seasons available through law?
Well, this is Dave. There was about 1996 or 1997, there was a new regulations package put in place by the Fish and Wildlife Service called Adaptive Harvest Management. And Adaptive Harvest Management was set up basically to look at, to try to manage ducks in a more scientific way. And the scientific way that they use is they use these set of models that looks at breeding habitat and breeding populations. And from the breeding population, basically from breeding mallard populations and from breeding and from the number of wetlands on the prairies in Canada, they determine what the fall flight might be. And then they also determine what the regulations package is going to be. And the problem with those models is that they don't take into account many of the things that are changing in Canada, at least that's in my opinion. What do you think, Paul?
I agree with you. The models are based to make the maximum sustainable yield rather than the maximum duck population. So they want to kill the most ducks, not produce the most ducks.
All right. Are you saying that they're doing this with erroneous information based on false numbers, or are they doing it intentionally? They know the numbers are low, but they don't want to give up the maximum yield.
I don't believe that there's any intention to try to hoodwink hunters or get rid of or do this in any kind of a intentional manner. I think the biologists and the Fish and Wildlife Service are all dedicated people. I just believe that the data that's coming into the models is not as informative as it could be. For example, the breeding population survey, which the Fish and Wildlife Service flies every year, they end up with a number that is then plugged into these models. Well, over the last 40 years, some things have changed on the prairies, the amount of habitat, but also the sex ratio of birds like mallards. The sex ratio of mallards has changed. When the original people came up with the May survey, there was an assumption that 50% of the ducks up there, 50% of the ducks were going to be males and 50% of the ducks are going to be females. Well, anybody that's hunted in the last 10 years can tell you that there's a lot more drakes out there than males. Well, that hasn't really been accounted for. And so when they do their estimates, they count the number of females, and then they count the number of males that are sitting by themselves. And some of those males are then assumed to be paired males. Well, if you have a much higher male ratio now, so there's lots more drakes out there than females, you get this increase in population that's just not true.
I got you. So bad day to in, bad day to out. Gentlemen, stay with me. Hold your thoughts. We're going to come back, and I'm going to share some of the audience comments with you, what the hunters out there are saying. And also we're going to hear from Josh Goins, and his opinion reflects what a lot of duck hunters believe, that it's not so much the population is down as it is the birds are not migrating as they have historically. We'll be right back. We're talking ducks in decline this morning right here on The Outdoors with Don Dubuque, Radio Network. All right, this portion of the show, we're talking about the duck decline. We have retired biologist David Rave and Paul Jakubczak with us with some opinions on why that came about and what some of the remedies are. We'll get to those a little bit later on. Looking at my text message board, I've got people rating this past season everything from a 0 to a 1. The highest so far was a 4. As far as what we'll do to stop hunting, this one says, I drew the line in the sand this year. So many bad reports. I didn't even take my gun out. I deer hunted all season. I am a diehard duck hunter. A couple of them said, as long as they're there, I will go. But what is your breaking point on ending duck hunting? Our text line is 504-260-1870. Another common topic, a comment, is about short-stopping. And Josh Goins, who had created the Flyway Federation, sent us a little bit of an audio message. We're going to play that now and let you listen to it and comment on it right after this. This is Josh Goins on shortstopping.
Hey, this is Josh Goins. I'd like to share some thoughts with you. The federal government passed the Migratory Bird Treaty in 1918. It was passed to protect the North American bird population from market hunting, baiting, and the loss of critical essential habitat for the population to sustain itself. The MBTA allowed the birds to be regulated and managed under federal protection, pulling the power from the states. Over 100 years has passed now, and the North American bird population is yet again facing major threats. Conservation is a great thing, but I see so many videos, posts, and articles using that word so loosely. Uncle Joe and Grandpa Jim, with their punt guns, going out and baiting up an area to shoot a mess of birds to feed and provide for their families, aka market hunting, doesn't compare, in my opinion, to what is currently happening in the flyways today. States now utilizing bait to attract and hold large populations of birds in small areas of land labeled as conservation and refuge systems. Private landowners utilizing the same practices operating large-scale hunting operations for profit, all in the name of conservation. The North American waterfowl population is a natural resource and should be treated as such. Seriously, what is the difference between a market hunter baiting up an area in the early 1900s and killing off 100 plus birds in one weekend, selling for personal gain, and the large-scale hunting operations we have today on state and privately owned lands, utilizing federal funding programs to plant, flood, attract, hold, hunt, kill, and sell the natural resource in drastic numbers day after day for an entire waterfowl season, all in the name of conservation? What's the difference? Somewhere along the way, we have lost the true meaning of conservation, and I can tell you what it's called: modern day market hunting. Thank you.
And that was Josh Goins with comments. A lot of our listeners are reflecting that same thing. We're going to take a quick 10-second pause for our stations to identify, and we're back with Paul Jakubczak and David Rave, retired biologists, and get their thoughts on the effects of short-stopping. We'll do that right after we let our local stations tell you who they are and where they are along the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. Well, Paul and David, you heard what Josh had to say. A lot of people, believe me, a lot of people are texting me with the exact same theories. What are your thoughts on this practices that are being allowed now? Is this a major contributing factor to overbagging, or is it restricting the normal migration patterns of birds? Or both?
Well, this is Dave. I guess I don't disagree with what Josh has to say. I agree with him that flooding areas is with flooded corn and flooded other things is baiting. I would say that the same goes up and down the flyway. When we flood rice fields in Louisiana, I believe that's a very similar situation, and a lot of it is dragging in birds, and they are killing birds over what I would consider baited fields. On the other hand, I'm going to give you a few numbers, and let's just look at some of the numbers from harvest, and let's go back to 1999. If we look in Minnesota, the total duck harvest in Minnesota in 1999 was 832,000. In 2023, 439,000, about 50% fewer. In Iowa, in 1999, the harvest was 210,000. In 2023, 93,000, getting closer to a third. If we go to Illinois, in 1999, 350,000. In 2023, 203,000. At least a third to two-thirds break. Arkansas, 1.8 million in 1999, 722,000 in 2023. And in Louisiana, 1.9 million in 1999 harvested. In 2023, 544,000, about a quarter of the number of ducks. So what I'm saying here is that the number of ducks harvested hasn't increased as you go to the north. It's decreased all the way up through the entire flyway. And so in my opinion, although, yes, I agree that flooding fields and killing birds with flooded fields is a serious problem and it's baiting, the real issue is that there's not as many ducks as there used to be.
Paul? Exactly. Understood. All right, guys, stay right there. We're going to come back after this break, and we'll talk about what you think needs to change and also some comments on the new pintail strategy that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is proposing. We're talking with retired biologist David Rave and also Paul Jakubczak right here on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. I want to thank all you listeners for your comments. You're texting in on our topic, the decline of ducks, to 504-260-1870. We're talking with Paul Jakubczak and David Rave, a couple of very experienced biologists who have spent basically their lives and careers managing waterfowl throughout the flyway. Guys, before we get into the pintail strategy and what you think the remedies are for turning this around, tell me about the impact on the seasons that we have and the way we hunt now, some of the gear. What impact do you think that has had on the over-harvesting of ducks?
Well, Don, this is Paul. I think there's been a lot of improvements. I think one of the major factors is mojo ducks are especially effective on immature ducks, and that's a factor that's never been figured into the regulations and the limit. And the surface drives, cell phones, all kind of communications, and improved decoys, improved shotguns, improved shells, all that has contributed to additional harvest of ducks. But before we move on, I want to mention one thing. I've been working on this, I call it the duck demise, since 2017. And I've contacted U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Wildlife and Fisheries, and anybody else that would listen, and told them I thought there was an over-harvest going on due to the current declined conditions of the breeding grounds. And I have not been successful in one little bit, and if the regulations people, the flyway councils and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife don't want to change for 28 years, I don't think they're going to change the baiting and the commercial guiding regulations, as mentioned by Josh Goins. I mean, I've been beating my head against the wall since 2017.
Well, what are the options? Should states like Louisiana, maybe some others, withdraw? I believe that was done decades ago over the goose population when Louisiana actually pulled out of the flyway.
Well, Don, it would take some very courageous members on the Wildlife and Fisheries Commission to do something like that. One little example, the mallard hen harvest has been two ducks forever, two mallard hens. Right now, the mallard hen population is in serious decline. one researcher actually stated that the mallard population has collapsed. So we just, the Flyway Council just got through meeting, and they haven't changed a thing. They've even increased the pintail population to 3 on a pintail population that's depressed.
Well, let's talk about the pintail. Let's talk about the pintails. You know, there are certain areas, and I've been privy to one particular spot in Stuttgart that was just, if you only went and hunted there, you'd say, oh, there's too many pintails. I also experienced a hunt just this last season down near the mouth of the river, and that's all we had coming in was pintails. But on the scale of things, pintails really, do they really warrant going to 3 per day?
Well, Don, this is Dave. You know, we went to adaptive harvest management in about 1997. I looked back at the breeding population for pintails, and in 1999, the breeding population of pintails, according to the Fish and Wildlife Service, which is about the best data that we have, I don't know how good it is, but at least we have that data, they said that the breeding population was 3.6 million. In 2023, which was 2 years ago, the breeding population was 1.98. So that's over a third lower than it used to be. And that's during an entire period when we've had one and two bird bags and mostly a one bird bag. So if the population hasn't recovered during a period of time when we have a one bird bag, I personally don't see how it's warranted to go to a three bird bag.
What's the argument on their part if you've got a diminished population and the data shows it? Why would you recommend an increase?
Well, the argument that I have heard is that they don't believe that hunting has an effect on ducks, and this is an experiment to try and find out whether hunting actually affects duck populations or not.
Hmm. Well, it could be a very costly experiment gone awry. All right, we got one more segment to go. When we come back, guys, I want you to talk about what needs to change, both on a political level, a flyway, a departmental, and even on an individual basis. What do you think needs to change? We'll be back with Paul Ryakovczak and also David Rave, a couple of retired biologists, and we're talking about the decline or the duck demise, as Paul puts it, right here on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. All right, we've been talking about the duck decline with retired biologists David Rave and Paul Ryakovczak. We've pointed out some of the what could be flawed data on part of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, possibly overbagging, some practices that restrict and alter the migration flights. What do we need to do to change this, guys, on a political level, maybe a federal level, a statewide level, and an individual level? What are your thoughts?
Well, Donna, this is Paul. I think that what needs to happen is there needs to be some fundamental adjustments to the breeding population survey. There's some faulty data being inputted. You know, a computer model is only as good as the information put into it. And if the May ponds are not what they're supposed to be, and the mallard male to female ratio is 80% to 20% when the model says it's 50-50, there's some basic fundamental problems with the population. If the population's elevated artificially, the AHM model or the harvest management model is skewed in the wrong direction. What we need is some fundamental changes to the BPOP, breeding population survey, and also there needs to be some conservative measures put into the regulation. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I would say that you're absolutely right on the modeling information. We need to get better data, which is always the case with models. But I do think that I would like to personally see some regulations changes. One of the fellow that we listened to the video or the tape on, Josh, he mentioned the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. When the Migratory Bird Treaty Act came in, well, you know, we quit hunting ducks on January 15th. And that was a political move to change it to the January 30th. When that happened, the northern states decided that they needed their extra time, and so they moved the season in the north from around the 1st of October back to closer to the middle of September. So I'd like to go back to do some regulation changes to set the seasons at the same time. And I think personally, I believe we need to have lower bag limits and particularly fewer days during the season for a little while to see if maybe we can get some duck recruitment.
So how do we get those things accomplished? Is it strictly a matter of political pressure, constituents contacting their elected officials and their representatives, or there's been talk of some possibilities of lawsuit? Could it get that serious?
I think it could get that serious. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, for 28 years, nothing's changed, and it's going to take some serious political influence. Just to give you an example, I'm in contact with a lot of hunters. And the average hunter, the guys that have been around a long time, can tell you there's not near the ducks there once was. They all expect in the season to be cut to 30 and 3 or 40 and 4 or whatever. And it's just not happening. And I can't explain it to them. And that's why we're on this program right now. We need to have some of the serious politicians that's involved in this start asking some questions in Washington, D.C. about why are we being so ignorant about duck populations.
Is it possible that there is some fear that it will reduce the number of hunters, which reduces the amount of funding that goes into waterfowl management?
Well, Don, with no ducks, there's going to be less hunters. I can promise you that.
That's for sure.
And all these people that are selling shotgun shells and surface drives and all are going to be hurting because the duck population is going down, down, down. You said it at the beginning of the program, the worst aerial survey in Louisiana in history.
So where's a good place for the guy listening to this program that is a concerned duck hunter? He's willing to tighten the belt in support, lower bag limits, maybe more restrictive on the number of days. Where does he start? Who does he contact?
In my opinion, you start with your state natural resources conservation leader. So whoever the state conservation leader is, send him a text, give him a call, tell him that you're tired of not seeing any ducks and you'd like something done about it.
What about the conservation organizations? There's a couple of big ones out there. They're continent-wide.
Yeah.
Can they help?
Don, this is Paul Yakovzak. That's one of my biggest things that I'd like to see. You know, the leaders in conservation, Ducks Unlimited, So Said, and Delta Waterfowl have lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and they have not, in my opinion, done one thing to help conservation of ducks. They could do it. They could. And they have a lot of members that donate a lot of money in the whole United States. And they're letting this duck population go down the tubes. And they
think,
could help.
I think maybe they have a false fear that if they come in support of fewer days and fewer birds, they would lose membership, where it could be just the opposite. That would actually help them gain members, people who would support that. Guys, we're out of time. It has been a very interesting half hour. Really appreciate you guys taking the time, and especially your passion for waterfowl. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Don. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it too, Don. Hope it does some good somewhere.
We certainly hope so. All right, when we come back after the top of the hour break, we'll get to some fishing reports, bad boys of the outdoors. Let's talk about replacing the Secretary of Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. Who do you think will be the next choice? We're back to do that right after this pause, where you're listening to The Outdoors with Don Dubuque.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You?
The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapper jacks.
Those aren't even the words. I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Radio Network. And welcome back in, hour number 2. I want to thank Paul and David, the retired biologists, for their excellent presentations on their opinion on the decline and demise of ducks and what some of the remedies might be to help restore. And I think one of the big things would be a philosophical change in the minds of hunters, where it doesn't become how many, it's more about experiencing the pleasure of getting out there, early morning sunrise, ducks starting to fly. There's nothing else like it, I think, in the outdoors. And that magic moment when the sun starts popping up on the horizon and the waterfowl start filing in and you hear the whistling wings. Well, it just gets me going. Anyway, we're going to talk some fishing for the rest of this hour, a little bit of hunting. Let's bring in Captain Daryl Carpenter of RealScreamers.com. And, Daryl, that rumor that was circulating around the Charter Boat Association meeting about Madison Shahan, the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries Secretary, apparently is true. Reuters News reported it yesterday that she's leaving to go work in the Department of Homeland Security. Your thoughts on her early departure after really just kind of getting here?
Well, Don, look, let's start off by saying she came in with a big question mark, and she seems to have done a fairly good job. I mean, she's kind of restoring the access back to the department. She, you know, it's just like, you know, prior administrations, you had to have permission from 3 levels of legal and administrative just to talk to anybody there. But, you know, they're more of an open department now. But we also knew that, you know, I mean, I think everybody knew that when she came along, it was viewed as a stepping stone, so to speak, to bigger and better things for her. So, yeah, it came as a, you know, I mean, happening this soon, probably wasn't looking for it, but it happened. And hey, good luck to her in her future adventures. I can't say she's done a bad job here by any means.
Well, she's going to do an important job with in the Office of Immigration at Department of Homeland Security. So congratulations to her, and best wishes. Now we start for the search for either an interim or a permanent replacement, and we'll see who that turns out to be. Darrell, we got a little bit of break in all that wind that had been blowing last week and yesterday, second half of yesterday, and looks like today. What would you suggest somebody going to fish Grand Isle? Where would they go? What would they try? What do they need to bring?
Well, you know, Don, everything's still a little bit stirred up right now. I mean, you've got a big tide range that's helping to spread around the dirty water, and you know, you're gonna have an incoming tide all day. So, number one, don't leave early. Let's wait and see if we get a little bit of cleaner water in, and of course, a little warmer water. The water dropped back down into the 50s, so you know, it's always warmer water creates for more active fish. Now, you know, you're starting on a dead low tide, so you know, maybe redfish would be your better thing to start off with. You catch the mouths of those drains, they're going to start filling back up. The redfish are going to be in the deeper holes outside of them waiting for that water to come back up, and as it does, they're going to start getting into your ponds and into the crevasses and so forth that all lead into them, because that's where your bait's going to be. So that's where I would start, and of course, I'd have some dead shrimp on the boat or, you know, at least some market bait to where you can start looking for the sheephead if that doesn't pan out, and, you know, get on top of those oyster beds and anywhere there's a structure. We've got several trips coming up, and trust me, I've got sheephead on their mind as the backup plan just in case.
Gotcha. Darrell, somebody wants to get in touch with you and look at the calendar, try to get on for the springtime run, tell them how to get you.
Well, Don, they can find me on your site at DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com. They can find me on RealScreamers.com. Or they can just pick up the phone at 225-937-6288. And if you've got a few minutes, Don, I can tell you I am not a duck hunter. But that first hour of your show had me glued to the phone listening to it on your stream, because it was a very informative, very interesting show. I could have done another hour of it.
Well, when you get two guys that are passionate and knowledgeable like Paul and David, that's what the end product is. And thank you for that compliment. Great seeing you at the Charter Boat Association meeting and all the guys there. And by the way, you have done an awful lot for that organization and getting it off the ground and getting it where it is today.
Well, thank you.
Darrell, we'll catch up with you next week, my friend. Catch a few.
Oh, we're going to, Don, the boat hits the water this week.
Good
news. It's fixed. It hits the water.
Good news. All right, we'll see you next week. Darrell Carpenter, RealScreamers.com. All right, up next, Captain Mike Gallo. I gave him an assignment last week to tell us about a customer he started taking out who is very inept and inexperienced at fishing and has become to progress to quite a fisherman. And I think he's going to pick one or two out for us and tell us that story. Also tell us what's biting and where in his area. It's what we do here on Saturday mornings on The Outdoors with Don Dubuque, Radio Network. Now, if you break down out in the marsh, who are you going to call? No, not Ghostbusters. Don't call them. You call CETO, and you would be very fortunate if you are signed up as a member, which you can do for $249 per year, and then it's renewable. They will come get you, tow you, bring you fuel if that's what you need, jumpstart electrical problems, take you all the way to the service center or your own dock at no expense. But on the other hand, if you got to pay, it ain't cheap. So call them today. Call Captain Chris. He'll sign you up, 504-301-4545, or you can visit CETO.com. You can also run into them at some of the upcoming boat and sports shows, too. A lot of times they'll be exhibiting there, and you can get signed up at your convenience. All right, let's talk to Captain Mike Gallo. Mike, last week when we left, I gave you an assignment to talk about a particular client that started off with you and was not what you'd call a real experienced fisherman by any means, but has progressed to become quite proficient. Can you give us the story? We don't necessarily need the name if they want to remain anonymous, but tell us the story about him.
Well, it's a fairly generic name, this gentleman. We'll call him Jeff. Anyway, when Jeff started fishing with me, you could tell he had a lot of desire to learn how to fish. He just hadn't put in the time to become proficient at it. And I can remember vividly, we would be sitting at the dock, 8 or 10 people milling around, and the table's full of fish. We're trying to get them all together and take a picture of the fish so that the captains can begin cleaning them. And Jeff would be sitting off in the corner, just looking sad and dejected, you know, and I'd say, Jeff, how many fish you caught? And he might show me two fingers, maybe three fingers. And we may have 50 fish up on the table, you know. But over the years, he got better and better and better and worked at it and worked at it and worked at it and pulled out many a backlashes, you know, the whole deal. And before you knew it, now before you knew it may have taken 5 years, but before you knew it, you wanted Jeff on your boat because you knew he was going to fish hard. He was going to put the lure in the strike zone, and he was going to catch fish. So it's just like anything else. I've heard it described as 10,000 hours. And you can become an expert at whatever you're trying to do when you put in 10,000 hours. That seems like a lot, but 8 hours a day fishing or 6 hours a day fishing. And I have fished with this group since 99, so it'll add up. And if the desire's there, fishing's not rocket science. You know, learn how to work your equipment, put your lure in the right spot, be able to detect the bite, be quick at setting the hook, and the rest is dealing with Mother Nature. And hopefully your captain can bring you to areas where there's clean water, moving water, bait fish, all the things we talk about, and set you up for success. So it certainly can be done. It just takes time behind the reel. Pay attention to what you're doing and stay with it.
That's kind of how I thought your story would go, and I'm sure there's more than one Jeff out there that's done that over the years with you. Well, Mike, before you go, give us what you know, fishing Lake Pontchartrain, Bourne, the Mystico, Biloxi Marsh. We got a little window here. You know, things kind of improved yesterday afternoon. It warmed up a little bit. The winds laid down. Water started to clear. Got a good tide range, and there's a 100% chance of rain tomorrow. But for today, somebody going out, what's Mike Gallo's best bet for success?
Well, there's some pockets of clean water down around the wall area, anywhere a couple of miles, you know, either east or west of the wall, as well as the intercoastal waterway leading up to the wall. That's deep water. It's warm enough. It's in the low 50 range. Since yesterday, it may have cleaned up even more, but there's fish to be had. The first thing I would do would look for mullet. If I see some mullet jumping along the shoreline, then that certainly tells me it's the water quality that I'm looking for. Good oxygenated water, clean, and there'll obviously be bait fish in it. So you'd want to spend some time there. I would work from deep to shallow as opposed from shallow to deep, especially early in the morning. Later in the day when the sun heats the water up a little bit, those fish may move shallower. I would certainly expect more fish caught between lunch and sunset than I would see being caught between sunrise and lunchtime. So you don't have to get out there really, really early. Take your time. And it can be a productive day. I had a couple of guys go out yesterday that were scouting for a trip today, and they came across some speckled trout, some redfish, some bass. There's quite a few fish out there that are not as affected by the water temperatures like the trout are. So if you concentrate on the redfish, the drum, the sheephead, the flounder, first thing in the morning, try catching those, and then as the temperatures warm up, the trout may get a little bit more aggressive, and you have a good day.
Well, I think you may have just improved a lot of people's chances of putting some fish in the boat today if they head out. And we thank you for that, Mike. And it was great seeing you at the Louisiana Charter Boat Association meeting and all the charter captains. You guys don't get a chance to get together very often, and that is one of the really good things that meeting presents. Mike, somebody wants to get you, you're on my website, DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com, your site, AAofLA.com, and you're always willing to chat on the phone. Give them that number.
Sure, you can reach me at 985-781-7811. We're also on social media at either Mike Gallo or Angling Adventures of Louisiana.
Very good, Mike. Have a great one. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Don. We'll talk to you then.
All right, coming back after this, it's our Paddler's Report. Eric Mohabarak joins us for that. Stay with us. We're back right after this on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. Well, our Paddler's Report, with or without Captain Eric, is brought to you by No Wake Outfitters. Get the name No Wake. And why do you think they named that? Because they specialize in paddlecraft fishing. Also, fly fishing. Got a really extensive line of some great fly items. The fishing rigs, you can get the rods, the reels, the line, the leader, the baits, and even some expert advice from some of the professionals that you'll find there at No Wake Outfitters, 1926 Airline Highway in Metairie. Never a traffic jam in that area. It's a great place for a store. They offer courses, and of course, a lot of instruction goes along with those Tackle Tuesdays, where they've got a special pricing on conventional tackle as well as the fly gear. Stop by and tell Justin and the crew hello. No Wake Outfitters, 1926 Airline Highway in Metairie. Well, I did talk to Eric this week, and he said with the weather, wasn't a whole lot going on for paddlers. The Trout Challenge is coming up for the Bayou Coast Kayak Fishing Club, 22nd of March. It's the best five trout. They got a little bit of discussion going on, and they're probably going to be voting on whether it's going to be a catch, photo, and release tournament or a traditional weigh-in for Paddlepalooza. He thinks the weigh-in is better. It's certainly good for sponsors. It adds to the camaraderie, but it certainly simplifies things with the catch, photo, and release. Tell me what you think. 504-260-1870. Do you prefer catch, photo, and release tournaments or actual traditional weigh-ins where you bring the fish to the weigh scale? Also want to remind everyone, the City Park Boats on the Bayou, March 29th, the end of next month. He calls it the last of the real kayak tournaments. They do not allow any motors for that one. It's in Bayou St. John in conjunction with the nation's oldest freshwater fishing event, which is the City Park, New Orleans City Park, Big Bass Tournament. Also want to remind you about special events coming up for our broadcast. We're going to be hitting the road to kick off March. On March 8th, 2 weeks from today, we're going to be back at Scott's Marine in Alberta, Alabama. My buddy Lucio, he's put together a great program for an open house boat show March 5th through 8th. Door prizes, free food. It'll be starting at 8 o'clock in the mornings. We'll be there at 5. They'll even let you in early on that Saturday. If you're looking for a pontoon boat, bass fishing boats, aluminum boats, bay boats, boats of any type, also for some of those ATVs, you might want to give them a call or stop by. Come by and see us. We're going to have some special guests there. Ed Miller from Wilmer, the wing bone, we call him. He's going to be demonstrating how to make turkey calls from wing bones. Turkey season's not that far off. In fact, we're going to give one away by drawing. We're going to have some free samples of Uncle Larry's gumbo and stew and a few. I'll have some St. Hubert prayer prints and some of those rare and very, very sought after. This is even sought after more than a Rex doubloon. A Don Dubuque official, O-F-F-I-S-H-A-L, listener hat. We'll be giving some of those away. When you say, all right, that's March 8th, Saturday morning, 5 to 7 in Alberta. They're going to have some free Bass Pro gift cards on selected models. Mercury's going to extend your warranty on selected horsepowers. Aluminum boats, fiberglass boats, fishing boats for offshore, Tracker side-by-sides, the quietest bike on the market. All of those at reduced introductory boat show pricing. That's Saturday, March 1st, Scott's Marine, Alberta, Alabama. Hope you can make it. Then the following week, we retreat to Mandeville and take part in Martian Bayou's Spring Fling. It's their biggest event of the year. It's at their retail store in Mandeville on Florida Boulevard. This is the third annual, and we'll be going there. I'd love to meet some of you coming in. I call it breakfast and bourbon. The Tin Cup guys show up there with some bourbon samples, and we do our early morning broadcast there. And they're going to be announcing some big changes if you're a fan of Martian Bayou Magazine. You might want to check all that out. They're going to have special factory reps come on hand from Marker 54. They've got items like Grundon's, the Matrix Shad. I believe Chaz Champagne's going to be out there. So put that on your calendar. That will be March the 15th, Saturday, 5 to 7, right there in Mandeville. All right, we come back after this break. Well, it's time to tell you the story of the Tri-Parish deer poachers, or a lesson on how to make venison the most expensive meat on the planet. That story's next, and you'll hear it right here on The Outdoors with Don Dubuque.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism, so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at Almased.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Radio Network. Although there has not been an official announcement from the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, Reuters News Service reported that the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries Secretary Madison Shahan, the top position, she will be leaving for a position with Department of Homeland Security. The search will be on for at least an interim, if not a permanent replacement. If, in fact, it's true, I would imagine it's time. This rumor has been circulating for several days this week, and then Reuters kind of confirmed it yesterday. So we'll be awaiting who the new secretary will be. She has appeared on this program with me, and although she came in under some very suspect circumstances from South Dakota with very little experience, people were saying wrong decision by Governor Landry, but to my involvement with her, I thought she was doing a very good job. She did some very controversial and some innovative things at the department in the short time she was there. So we wish her luck. Also, another change is coming about. A longtime Coastal Conservation Association with Louisiana CEO David Cresson is leaving. He is going to take a job as the CEO and president of the Louisiana Chemical Association. And I've worked with David in the 17 years that he's been there. Great guy. He's been very active in increasing the membership and the fundraising. During his tenure, they developed the reef program by where they put the artificial reefs out in the Gulf. He's certainly helped implement the Louisiana, the Lac Creel program, which has helped. He's been to the legislature religiously fighting for the rights and the conservation of all of our species and along coastal Louisiana. And you may recall he spent a lot of time with me on the air very early in the mornings on Saturdays talking about the menhaden and the pogey boat until it finally came to what we are hoping will be a permanent resolution in that. So congratulations, Louisiana CCA, David Cresson, heading for greener pastures, we hope, with Louisiana Chemical Association. All right, it's bad boy time. In fact, I got three of them. We're going to tell you about the Tri-Parish Deer Poachers right after we pause 10 seconds for our local stations to identify themselves on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. On January 18th, on the Lake Ophelia National Wildlife Refuge in Avoyelles Parish, during a primitive weapons lottery deer hunt, Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fishery agents on patrol got some information, a tip, about three subjects, Ricky Bordelon, Curtis Levine, and William Pennington, taking deer illegally. During a license and compliance check, the agents noticed some inconsistencies with their deer tagging procedures. And during the course of that investigation, the agents learned that the men had bagged a total of 12, an even dozen, illegal deer in Wynn, Rapides, and Avoyelles Parishes during this last 2024-25 deer season. For over the daily limit of antlerless deer, failing to tag deer over the seasonal limit of antler deer, and taking an illegal deer to an open season, facing criminal fines of $1,600 and 90 days in jail, plus a shared civil restitution in the amount of, get this number, $19,495 replacement value, or 55-year-old Ricky Bordelon of Alexandria, 64-year-old Curtis Levine of Pineville, and 53-year-old William Pennington of DeVille, Louisiana, are bad boys of the outdoors. You know, normally on these stories, the game is confiscated and donated to a nonprofit. Not so in this case. I guess they had consumed or disposed of the deer by the time the charges were filed. So I got to tell you, they found a way to make venison the most expensive meat on the planet, over $20,000. Hope they enjoy their venison sausage. All right, a couple more things I wanted to mention. There's going to be, in fact, it's ongoing now, a fundraising event for a Lafitte area charter boat captain. You know, his name is Mike Helmer, and he's got some health challenges that he and his family are facing. And some of his fellow charter captains have put together a fundraising event where they have put together something like 7 all-expense-paid charter boat trips that you can win by making a small contribution to the fund. And this, again, is for Captain Mike Helmers. And we'll be talking to Angela Caruso, and we'll be hearing from Phil Robichaux in the coming weeks about how you can do that. It's $25 a ticket. I think there's 5 of them for $100. And not only will you'll be helping a very beloved charter captain who has taken a lot of people and helped them catch fish and find fish and learn how to fish in that area, but also you get a chance to possibly win an all-expense-paid trip with a professional fishing captain. And these captains represent areas not just in his area of Lafitte, but also in Delacroix and some of the other areas too. So we'll be talking about that more in the coming weeks. And helping one of your own. And I told Angela yesterday that my experience with this audience is hunters and fishermen are some of the most generous people you'll ever meet, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of participation in this benefit for Captain Mike Helmer. All right, we got some more coming up. Let's see, we're going to be talking to Captain Ryan Lambert, Cajun Fishing Adventures. He's back in country, I'm sure, and find out what they're doing down there in the Burris area. And also, we're going to have a live report from a very good event. Unfortunately, I'll miss it this year, but I've been to it several occasions. It's called the Boucheret, Chef John Foltz. It's all about Louisiana's history and culture of slaughtering a pig and using every part of it. And but I'll tell you what, there's a lot more to it about other dishes and the history and learning, and we'll tell you how you can get involved when we talk to David Hubble, who is one of the exhibitors up there now. We'll be back to do those things right after this pause. You're listening to The Outdoors with Don DeVue, Radio Network. And the plastic man is none other than Captain Ryan Lambert at Cajun and Fishing Adventures, and we take you down there to Burris now. And Ryan, I'm looking at the river level somewhere around 11. Boy, it really jumped, huh?
Yeah, it jumped up. It was supposed to be 2.9 in March about 3 weeks ago, and now, boy, with all the snow and rain and all those events throughout the Mississippi Valley, it jumped up. Oh, man.
Yeah, you guys live and die with that river. What's that going to mean for a high river that high this spring? You think you're predicting a spillway opening maybe?
No, that's 17. It's flood stage. It's not even high. It's going to crest at 12.7. So, you know, that just gets in the parking lot. That's not bad at all.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we don't get any more of that, you know, conditions.
Well, we will, because there's a ton of snow up north, but a lot of it's in the east, so the east got hammered, and we won't get all of that if it's east of the Ohio. You know, it just depends on how much comes down to Ohio. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I lived 10 years with a flood stage river, and we still catch fish.
So, yeah, you just have to go to different places.
You just have to learn to adjust. I mean, good thing is it's building land. You know, that's the good thing about having a high river. It's working.
You know, I was thinking about you this week because I've been hearing on the news about this Doge and Elon Musk and these millions and billions of money that's being thrown away, and I'm going, why couldn't that money? It would take a fraction of that money to do what we need to do here to rebuild the Louisiana coast.
You know, they're talking about billions. They find $20 billion in this fund and $2 billion in that fund. It doesn't take me. Look what I did with $1 million. And hopefully I can get the CPRA and the wildlife fishery to come together for me and give me an okay, because they want to give me another $10 million and build 25,000, 30,000 acres. And it can be done so easily. So I'm just waiting. I've been fighting the battles, you know.
Is anybody in Washington screaming for this? I mean, you know, they're going to have an awful lot of money. They're talking about giving every taxpayer 20% of the total back in $5,000. Man, there's so many uses for that, and I can't think of a better one than to save the state of Louisiana.
Yeah, me and you. But again, that's self-interest. But they're too busy yelling at each other, screaming at each other to scream for that. But you know, I'm going to get some more money. I just got to get these legal hurdles out the way, and when I do, I'll get some more money, and I will build wherever the river's touching. I can build. So it's coming. You know, it's in the habitat. You know, they can say everything they want about our ducks. But if there's not a piece of aquatic vegetation from Venice all the way into Lake Buff, there's no food. You know, why would they come here if there's no food for them? How could they possibly stay here if there's no food? So, you know, we have to get our house in order. Because the most populous duck in the area is a mallard. We don't have any mallards anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we used to be able to kill all the mallards, you know, limits of mallards everywhere from the Zalmans and Chaffalai and all. In the West, there was mostly mallards at Oak Grove and places like that.
Pecan.
Well, now there's none.
Yeah.
Yeah, now there's none. We have no habitat. We have no food. The model ducks are going downhill right and left. Look at all the model ducks where I built that land. There's thousands of them. So it's just habitat loss. So, you know, we've lost 2,400 square miles of land, but we've lost 10,000 square miles of habitat. Ducks don't eat land. They eat habitat.
But you know, I've always said I never thought it was a lack of technology or the know-how or the resources to do it. It was always a lack of money. I was always questioning, where would this money come from? Well, there's plenty of money now. There's so much money.
There's always been plenty of money. They printed out everything they wanted. They printed everything they wanted. It's just getting your hands on some of it, you know, to build Louisiana. And then you got to have the will. I mean, listen, they got Mid-Bash shut down right now. The will's there, the project's there, but yet politics got in the way to shut it down.
Yeah.
So we have to get our own house in order. So hopefully we can get that done. You know, open that one up and do some more further up north and bring our estuaries back, and we'll have ducks again. You know, it might take a little while to imprint them. I mean, there's a lot of ducks staying up north now because, you know, the cornfields and such. You know, a lot of people believe in shortstopping, and I'm sure some of that's true. But if we get the habitat, it's been a pretty cold winter, you got to admit.
Oh, it's 10 inches of snow in New Orleans, I'd say.
So I'm going to go fly fishing today. I'm going to catch some redfish. And the boys, everybody, the redfish weren't everywhere yesterday, but they whacked them real good. Everybody caught their limit. We're not really fishing trout because of the winds and the cold right now, but they're still there because I caught some the week before I went to Mexico. We caught them. So they're there. So we just have to get some good weather to go get them.
Well, today is the window day. Tomorrow looks like a pretty much a wash.
100% chance of rain. Yeah, I canceled my fly fishing trips for the bar because of that.
Yeah. So what is your favorite fly for those reds and drum?
You know, I like this purple fly with a chartreuse on the top. You know, I like that. And I like one black with some red flakes coming off the back, some red flash. Mm-hmm. Depends on the time of year. But right now, the shrimp a little, and they chase it down the banks, eat them shrimp. So I like something that looks like a small shrimp, kind of a... But I always like a little chartreuse there because the shrimp's tail is a chartreuse.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, the shrimp this year is going to be crazy. I mean, the oyster fishing, catching them in their drags. Had my buddy go fish live bait yesterday. Caught 16,000 in 45 minutes.
Woo! I put my order in.
Yeah. Yeah, there's going to be a ton of shrimp this year. And there's a lot of fish not going to be there to eat them. You know, we had a mass kill off for specks and reds throughout the whole state. So crabs and shrimp ought to be fabulous this year. So, you know, it's cycles and Mother Nature takes care of herself. And, you know, you just got to be out here to see it. You just can't sit at home and hear about stuff and call it facts, you know?
Yep.
So, I don't know.
Go get some of that good experience today, and we'll catch up with you next week. In the meantime, somebody wants to book a trip down there, tell them how to do it.
Oh, they can go to CajunFishingAdventures.com and check out the website or call me direct at 504-559-5111.
I also got a picture of you on my website that needs to be updated.
I bet now I'm old, huh?
Yeah, you were real young when we took that picture. So was I.
I got a really quick story. I'm in Mexico, and I'm doing an all-day duck hunt because I couldn't quail when I hurt my wrist. I took a little nap in the middle of the day. I woke up, my hands all swollen. I looked, a freaking rattlesnake bit my hand while I was sleeping. Can you believe that?
And the rattlesnake died, right? Immediately.
Well, I hope he did, because my hand was all swollen up, but he did get me good. He didn't put the poison in.
Yeah.
And it went down. I didn't go to the doctor.
Yeah. Well, I got, you know, I have a pet snake, and I'm not afraid of snakes. But a poisonous snake, so a venomous is really the correct term. I got an agreement with him. If a venomous snake bites me, he dies first.
Well, this I don't know if this will die, but he sure got a mouthful.
Well, be careful out there, buddy. We'll see you next week.
All right, buddy. See you.
Captain Ryan Lambert, bitten by a rattlesnake. Didn't go to the doctor, but this looks like it was fatal to the snake. All right, coming back after this, David Hubble joins us. Guess where he is? He's at Chef John Foltz's Boucherie at White Oak Estate and Gardens. And, boy, they got a party going on. Back with his report of what you'll see if you drop in right after this on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. Well, today is the day of the celebration of the Boucherie, and that is at John Foltz's White Oak Estate and Gardens. And we take you there now. And David Hubble's one of the demonstrators and exhibitors. And, David, how is this year's Boucherie shaping up, and what can people expect who come there today?
Oh, man, it is shaping up great. We just finished the butcher's breakfast. And, you know, so when you start with some praline bacon and candied bacon and stone milled grits, it's a good way to start. So it's shaping up pretty good. The smell of pork's in the air. The roosters are crowing. People are milling about. So we're ready to go.
What's the idea behind the Boucherie?
Well, years ago, you know, traditionally when you had small families together, they'd raise pigs and calves and such. And in the wintertime months, you know, we didn't have refrigeration. So each family would get together, butcher a pig, and divide the spoils up amongst each other. And so John Foltz decided many years ago, back in 2016, to keep this tradition alive, because it's kind of gotten away from us with modern times. So we'll demonstrate how to treat the animal in a humane fashion, say a prayer, and then we'll demonstrate the different ways to cook the different dishes at 10 different stations, as well as lectures on other types of culinary history.
All right, here's the important questions. Is there rooster and coon stew and beaver tail this year?
There's no beaver tail that I'm aware of, but yes, there's rooster and coon stew. Some of my friends, chefs from Alabama, will be preparing that. And as you know and I know, it's one of the most delectable stews that you can find around here.
Absolutely is. And what booth will they find you?
Well, I will be first giving a talk with John's brother Jerry and historian Jim Hunter on a talk on the combination or the comparisons of Pennsylvania scrapple, hogshead cheese, and New Orleans-style daube glacé. And I'll be talking about daube. And then after that, I'll be working with Phil Wingo at the Andouille table. So that's station one.
Yeah, tell Phil and Danling and all that gang up there, and John especially, hello for me. You're going to miss it this year. Well, you get to sample great food and learn the history and culture behind it. It's on 17660 George O'Neill Road is the listed address of White Oak Estate and Gardens. And you can take I-12 and take the exit there, probably put it in MapQuest. What time will the doors open for the general public, David?
8 o'clock, and you'll get to walk the grounds. You can see the distillery. That's the other thing, is John will be showing off his distillery. So it's bourbon and Boucherie 2025. And you get to sample some of his Stillwater bourbon and rum. So there'll be talks on that as well. So it opens at 8. You can come around, sample different things. And then the big lunch, the spoils of the Boucherie, where you get to taste all these things. That's the other thing. In addition to just watching, you get to eat. And that'll be at 1 o'clock. And if you leave here hungry, it's your own darn fault.
I call it grazing through the White Oak Estate and Gardens. What a beautiful place and what a great event. And I'm glad you got this window of opportunity weather-wise. Looks like it's going to be a great day for it.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect Boucherie weather. It's cool. It's a little cloudy than, let's say, last year. But it still has a good atmosphere. They got a great tent set up, so you can stand in an area and it'll stay warm. And you'll get to visit all the different stations.
Very good. David, thanks so much for giving us the update, and hopefully get a big crowd and everybody has a wonderful time. And I'll look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. I hope you can make it out to our broadcast over there at Scott's Marine.
Well, that's my plan. I got some pepper jelly in tow to take to you, and we'll visit you and Lucio, and we'll see.
Sounds good. Tell everyone hello, and y'all enjoy the day. Thanks again for the report, right, David. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Don. Talk
David
to you later.
Hubble, one of the exhibitors at the John Foltz Boucheret, bourbon in Boucheret. By the way, that Stillwater bourbon and rum that he distills up there, it's the only place you can get it. It's not for sale anywhere else, and today he's got some free samples. Very special day at John Foltz's White Oak Estate and Gardens. All right, thanks to all of our fishing reporters, David Hubble, also Paul Jakubczak, and David Rave for their excellent presentation on waterfowl. And thanks for you for your participation. And we'll be back again to do this next Saturday and every Saturday. We do it from 5 to 7 a.m. It's the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network.